public enemy number one. That's the term used by the World Health Organization in reference to the coronavirus outbreak. But for Chinese and East Asian communities around the world, many are increasingly feeling as though they are public enemy number one. Shocking incidents of racism have been reported following the coronavirus outbreak. So on today's special episode, we're speaking to a Japanese doctor making a stand against fake news and discrimination, to an expert in emergency risk communications and the needs of vulnerable populations, and to members of the local Chinese community here in London. I'm Katie Steeles, and this is LSHTM Viral. Here in London's Chinatown, it's noticeably quieter than usual. Many restaurants have reported a downturn in trade since the coronavirus outbreak began, and we're now seeing daily reports in the media of racist abuse and attacks. We begin today's episode with Edmund and Jabez.
My name is Jabez Lam. I'm working as a joint manager of the Headley Chinese Community Center, and I have involved in the Chinese community for the last 40 years on matters that affect the community and the rights of the Chinese in this country.
My name is Edmund Ng. I'm a senior statistician from the Director's Office of the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine, and I have been a member of the London Chinese community for over two decades. And Jabez and I go back many, many years. Yes. There have been many reports of racism against Chinese and East Asian communities. Can you tell us what's been happening here in London and probably the rest of the UK?
As the initial news about this new virus emerged, the Chinese community, by and large, were focused on how the virus affecting their family back home. However, as it developed, Chinese community experienced a lot of racism, racist behavior, attitude towards them, and that to the extent that the Chinese New Year just gone a couple of weeks ago, for the Headley Chinese Center, we cancel our event of invitation to the dignitaries because we, as a precautionary measure, to avoid any racist backlash. This is in particular prevalent in social media, where it is quite open associations of the Chinese community as the source rather as a victim. And there were open advocation about hatred towards the Chinese or racist joke commonplace. We also have experience of reports from members and volunteers about when they travel to the center or in the underground, how people are staying away from them and they feel that they were being targeted, make them feel unwelcome. And we have a volunteer of the center, someone spat at her and tell her to bring the virus back to your country. So it has turned from a focus on the virus to the focus of the racist experience that we have to deal.
Is this harassment or racism something that the community has experienced before? For example, in the SARS outbreak, and how did the community respond then?
The Chinese community in this country has experienced racism all the time, but specifically relating to a disease, a virus, we have two experiences. One is with the Foot and Mouth campaign, whereby the Chinese community in the country mobilized when the national media suddenly report that the Foot and Mouth may originate from a Chinese restaurant in Newcastle. And that is the first time that the Chinese community have a direct apology from the Ministry of Food and Ministry of
Agriculture,
Fishery and Food. And that gave the confidence of the community that we can change things. And 2 years later, when the SARS has become an epidemic and affecting something like 30 countries, and in this country we have 4 cases reported. To look back, I do not recall any reported incident of racial attack or racist attitude towards Chinese. It seems that at that time there is a more international recognition about cooperation between states, between countries, in dealing with virus like this, and SARS is a new virus, like this, the one we encounter now. But at the time, the atmosphere is very much about how are we as a quote-unquote international community can work together. World Health Organization and politicians and the media has a very big role in how to focus the world in dealing with new crisis. And it seemed to me that in the SARS time, the international cooperation, international spirit are very much seeing new virus as a common a threat to human race. Mm. Now it seems that the emphasis is on protectionism, that let's protect our own home, keep the virus outside my front door, and blame all those who do suffer rather than helping those sufferers to overcome it.
So that sounds like to me, Jabez, you're emphasizing on a shift of the geopolitical landscape from 2003, when the world was recognizing the importance of international cooperation, to 2009-2020, when it seems to me that populism is very much on the rise.
Yeah, whether you call it populism or protectionism, it has lost sight about the bigger picture. That a virus doesn't discriminate between race, whether you're black, white, or East Asian, nor would it respect borders, whether it's in Asia, in Europe, or now we have a case in Africa, unless we focus ourselves to see the virus as something that we need to work together, just like climate change. Unless we work together, it will get out of control. We need to remain focused and help to contain this.
So going forward, what would you like to see happen in this current outbreak?
During the AIDS epidemic, the gay community was being stigmatized as the source or spreading their disease. It took decades of public health education to correct this misperception. We need to put things in perspective. We need to combat misinformation and to improve community knowledge in the prevention and help to control or eliminate the virus sooner. Mm.
So Jabez, you would like to see a public health campaign to combat against the misinformation that's been populated in the, let's say, social media?
Definitely. I think it's proven it has been successful. For example, I gave earlier about the AIDS, that was very similar. The misperception of single out the victim as a source rather than single out the virus as that need to eliminate. And the success of the education about how the origin of the virus and of AIDS have changed people's attitude and perception and bring about cooperation. I very much hope that that can be repeated.
Yeah, I totally agree with you, Jabez. So if any of our listeners have experienced a suspected racist or other xenophobic incident in the UK, is there any way that we can signpost them for support?
The first step is to report to police. Also monitor the situation yourself and make proper log of what happened to assist the police in identify and arrest the perpetrator where possible. Mm. So that's the best way.
Also, there's a webpage set up by your association to inform people about what qualifies as a hate crime and also a link for reporting the crime. And thank you for your time.
Thank you.
If you are a member of the Chinese community and have experienced racism and harassment due to the outbreak, there's a link to advice and support from Hackney Chinese Community Services in the episode description. As of recording, there have been more than 75,000 confirmed cases of COVID-19 and 2,000 deaths, mostly in mainland China. Neighbouring Japan is one of the next most affected countries, albeit with a handful of cases and just one death to date. Kazuki was an emergency physician in Japan and is currently studying at LSHTM.
My name is Kazuki Shimizu. I'm an MSc student at London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine and London School of Economics.
What's the current feeling in Japan regarding the outbreak?
So the situation is tremendously changing day by day. So many Japanese people are currently very confused and feeling a fear with the ongoing situation for COVID-19. A couple of weeks ago, at around the Chinese New Year's season, only a few cases were reported in Japan. So at that moment, among the media or among the general public, COVID-19 was the issue just only in Wuhan or just only in China, at least not in Japan. So during the Chinese New Year, a great number of tourists were assumed to visit Japan, and there was a discussion in the media regarding how to prevent the virus or the infected from entering the Japanese society. So in the early phase of COVID-19 outbreak, some fake news has led to xenophobia towards the patients or Chinese visitors. For example, on January 24th, the misinformation, like a Chinese passenger from Wuhan with a fever, have slipped through the quarantine at Kansai International Airport in Osaka, one of the biggest cities in Japan. Of course, Kansai International Airport has denied the fact promptly, but that information has disseminated multiple social media.
So a real problem, it sounds like, with fake news and misinformation in mass media and social media.
Yes, exactly.
And I know you wrote about this in a recent correspondence to the Lancet Medical Journal, so we'll include a link to that article in our episode notes for our listeners if they want to take a look.
Thank you very much.
And what do you think is kind of driving this behaviour and these fake stories?
There are two key components regarding this matter. So first is the novelty. I mean, it's a new virus. It's a novel virus. So there is currently no evidence, which meaning that a wide variety of opinions or some ideas have come up, not only in the social media, but also in the website or all over the world. And Twitter or Facebook or Instagram is prospering. Each person tends to pick up the story, what they want, not the true story, which contribute to making the cluster with the similar preferences. And another one is anonymity in social media. So some social media can be used, like Twitter can be used anonymously, and anonymity can easily lead to arrogant behaviors or like violent expressions or like that.
So what do you think needs to be done differently in Japan to change this?
It's a multi-layer issue. So first is the media. The responsibility of the media is to argue critically argue the issue itself with a bunch of evidence, and they need to think about the evidence level. The second one is the healthcare providers. Healthcare providers should be educated in terms of the health communication, because they are not educated regarding the health communication. Even in the public health schools, we have little opportunity for how to convey, how to deliver the evidence to the audience, to the general public. But they should be educated. And the third one is the consciousness of the citizens itself. So healthcare is a limited resource for all the citizens. How to protect the vulnerable people is one of the agenda for achieving universal healthcare in all the country, not only in Japan, but also all the world. And health literacy should be raised.
So it's a three-pronged approach there, looking at the responsibility of the media, what healthcare professionals are trained in and able to communicate, and then getting that out to the citizens.
Yes.
So what's driving the behaviours and attitudes we've been hearing about, and how can the global response to the outbreak help address this? LSHDM social scientist Lisa now joins us on the phone.
I'm Lisa Lin, assistant professor at the Faculty of Public Health Policy. Unfortunately, discrimination, stigmatization have often been common during epidemics, and they consistently correlate with racism and xenophobia. When diseases are thought to be deadly, people sometimes cope with their fears by blaming new disease outbreaks on someone or some group of people who live outside of their own social circle. So often people whose national, ethnic, or religious backgrounds are different from those of the mainstream, quote-unquote, mainstream group, actually have historically been accused of spreading the disease. For example, like we see that Chinese people during the SARS and this current new coronavirus outbreaks, and Africans during Ebola epidemics. On the contrast, that when we are looking at H1N1 pandemics, which primarily affected the US, United States, and then spread to the rest of the world, it did not generate a national or racial-based discrimination backlash of this magnitude. Actually, within the US, just to be exact, within US, Mexican Americans were being blamed and discriminated against. So I think the spread of racism and xenophobia through the media is frequently found in the event of an epidemic. So studies have shown in the past that Ebola, even Zika, H1N1 for Mexican Americans, for example, these are there evidence like in like a consistent occurrence of these type of discrimination. So mass media plays a significant role in disseminating information during a public health emergency. However, the framing of the media draws attention to certain aspects of the issue, and in the case of an epidemic, can often fuel public fear and discrimination. Such framing often involves alienating one subcommunity from the rest of the population as a leading responsible factor for an outbreak. So this creates a divide of them versus us. So this them could be replaced as, for example, the African community during Ebola, or be replaced as now the Chinese community during coronavirus outbreaks, versus us, which are the general population. So I think this is done not only through descriptive narratives, but also through the images shown to the audience as part of the news story, either on print media or on TV. So, and then unfortunately now with social media has also resulted in echo chambers of people who share inaccurate and sometimes racist information among those with persisting views towards certain subgroups of the society. So this requires us and for decision makers, policy makers, and risk communicators to actively break down and debunk what is happening in the media and in the communication, and then so that we can help, hopefully, steer the public opinion to the right course.
Both Jabez and Kazuki have called for public health campaigns to help tackle the discrimination. Is that something that you would support?
Yes, I would definitely do that. Discrimination and blaming happens quite often, unfortunately, alongside with the outbreaks. One way to address the situation when discrimination arises during an epidemic is to recognize them and to confront them. So I think that people might be doing it without realizing they are feeding into the narrative. So it actually would have been helpful if we debunk what's happening, we call it out as if we see it. And then that's going to help to improve the narrative, not only for this outbreak, but also for future outbreaks.
Thank you to Edmund Ng, Jabez Lam, Kazuki Shimzu, and Lisa Lin, who all contributed to today's episode. Kazuki is studying the joint MSc in Health Policy Planning and Financing at LSHTM and the London School of Economics. You can find out more about studying with us at the LSHTM website. And thank you to all of our listeners who have been getting in touch. Keep sending your questions about the science behind the outbreak to us. We'll put an email address in the episode description for you. Remember to subscribe to LSHTM Viral. And thanks for listening.